Welcome to another episode of For the Medical Record, our podcast hosted by the Center for Medical Humanities and Social Medicine here at Johns Hopkins University. We, your co-hosts, are both postdoctoral fellows here. My name's Christy Slobogan.
And I am Antoine Johnson.
And today, who are we interviewing?
Oh, we got a good one for y'all. So it was almost a full house. One person who we have with us is Dr. Jessica Marie Johnson, who is an associate professor in the Department of History at the Johns Hopkins University and a fellow at the Hutchins Center for African and African American Studies. And we have Lauren Rubin, who is the director of development at the St. Francis Neighborhood Center here in Baltimore. And we have Dr. Sasha White, who is jointly affiliated with the Department of Sociology and the Department of the History of Medicine at Johns Hopkins University. Dr. Kim Gallen, Associate Professor of Africana Studies at Brown University, could not join us today, but as you will hear during this episode, her presence was definitely felt.
Yeah, for sure. We had such a good conversation with this group who are all connected to each other through the Black Beyond Data Project, which is the main topic of conversation during this episode. And the Black Beyond Data Project is a Mellon Foundation funded project. It uses digital humanities to look beyond data in its traditional forms, and it looks at how Blackness and Black humanity can push our thinking about data. And then, as you know, Sasha very eloquently said in our interview, he says that the Black digital humanities, as used by Black Beyond Data and other projects, is quite radical in what it can achieve. So we talked to them throughout this episode about what their project is doing, what they're achieving, and how they are using data in this new and radical way. So yeah, it was a really inspiring conversation.
Definitely.
And we're excited to share it with you. So thank you for listening.
Enjoy and let us know what you think.
Thank you all so much for joining us on For the Medical Record. We're really excited to have all of you from the Black Beyond Data Project. Mm-hmm. Just to start, so that our listeners have a good foundation to build upon, could one of you or a couple of you summarize what the Black Beyond Data Project is, its goals, and its current work, and what you all are all doing?
Happy to. Thank you also, Christy and Antoine, for having us. It's very exciting to be here with the team. So Black Beyond Data is a Mellon-funded initiative that began as thinking about and creating a social sciences and computational humanities research lab at Johns Hopkins University, and has since really evolved into so much more. Right now, we are in the first leg of our Mellon grant that is towards creating a Black Beyond Data ecosystem that is really rooted in thinking about how community data, how the medical humanities and data around race, with a focus on people of African descent, and how history of slavery and history broadly are thinking about data altogether. So sort of in a sentence, one of the things we're all grappling with is how does Blackness move us beyond thinking about data in its traditional form? And how does Blackness really push those who are having conversations about data, whether that's data scientists or folks who are community activists and organizations or academics? How does Blackness really have us think differently about how the human and how Black humanity have shaped the ideas and questions around data, and are really very much part of how we need to challenge and expand and push conversations about data in the present day.
Sweet. Thank you, Dr. J. To piggyback off of that, I was curious how or when did you all realize that this was something that you should work on together? And, you know, what was the process like for putting this massive project together? Like you mentioned the Mellon grant. I'm curious, like, when did that come into the picture?
I can speak to my experience on how St. Francis Neighborhood Center got brought into the mix, which was through Saeed Chowdhury, who has since moved on to Carnegie Mellon, but was at Sheridan Libraries at Hopkins at the time. And he has always been a supporter of St. Francis Neighborhood Center and us in thinking, you know, this might be a good link, and spoke to Kim, Dr. Gallen, about that as well. And really, I think, sort of played the role of matchmaker, I think, in bringing us all together on this project, bringing a bunch of really, not necessarily disparate, but definitely different parts to create this larger ecosystem between these pillars of health, community, and academia. And since then, it's really expanded and broadened even more.
Lauren, just could you briefly explain what the St. Francis Neighborhood Center is and what, you know, Dr. Gallen couldn't be here today, unfortunately, but explain a bit more what her work within the wider Black Beyond Data project is as well?
Absolutely. So St. Francis Neighborhood Center is the oldest continually operating neighborhood center in all of Baltimore City, as far as we know. It is our 60th anniversary. We were founded in 1963 amid the civil rights movement to really create a holistic center and place for the Reservoir Hill and Penn North communities of 21217, where Sasha incidentally also takes up residence, if that's okay to say.
I'll rep Reservoir Hill for sure.
Awesome. So our mission is to end generational poverty, and we do that through our after-school and summer programming and in connections to the community, inspiring self-esteem, and all the different programs that we offer. And so we were brought into this for the community aspect, for the community data project, which Kim and I work on together. And her work in community-based data analytics has been invaluable on this project, including setting up workshops, shaping our community needs survey, and making sure that we are engaging with the community in ways that are equitable and not just being extractive in the data collection process. Dr. Gallen is also the founder and director of COVID Black, which is an amazing organization that really grapples with Blackness and the pandemic and data coming from that and how it affects those communities. So, you know, she's at Brown now, really an amazing scholar and working in community as well.
You know, mentioning Dr. Gallen and her work, her fascinating work with COVID Black, I was curious, maybe Sasha, if you could touch on how the Black Beyond Data Project intersects with the medical humanities and the history of medicine, you know, the topics that we primarily focus on this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are so many intersections. I joined this group, you know, in large part coming out of a lot of the work that I had been engaged with relating to the COVID-19 pandemic. And speaking about resisting and thinking about the ways in which fundamentally data on, you know, what we might call racial health disparities, as well as deeply, deeply flawed assumptions and conclusions, especially about vaccine hesitancy, what we might call vaccine hesitancy in, you know, African-American communities around the United States, the ways in which fundamentally data on Black life and Black experiences have been misused and misappropriated either in the present day to define and flatten entire groups of people and populations, or historically in the ways in which, especially medical data, pushing eugenic ideas about the ultimate devastation of Black communities through tuberculosis, you know, the ways in which health data that has been taken on Black people's bodies have been misappropriated and misused is something that we fundamentally need to fight against. And it's a central component of this project, which is really thinking about the usage of data on Black life and challenging those interpretations and thinking and resisting those forms of analysis.
I mean, I just want, you know, I'm just kind of reflecting back on like how far this, you know, whole project, you know, has taken the conversations around Blackness and data. I mean, like when it began, you know, again, shout out to Saeed Choudhury, who really kind of initiated the conversation with Patricia Sway at the Mellon. And it began as sort of thinking about, in particular, a community data content management system. And Saeed and Lauren and Kim Gallen in particular also really understood that there's something more here to be worked through. Like, it isn't just about, you know, what is the right infrastructure, but it's also about how that integrates with the community. And so I definitely want to also like really kind of foreground Kim, because she can't be here. Kim Gallen's work had been really instrumental for years on this topic, and not just working with COVID Black, but also in working with the Black Press Research Collective, which was one of the key organizations and projects and that initiated, that was part of that initial planning grant in 2021. So this all began in 2021. And that work, that really Black studies focused, Africana studies focused way of thinking about data in combination with really centering the community, that got such an amazing boost from the work that Sasha's doing around medical humanities, around race and medicine. Jeremy Green also deserves a mention here as part of that core group of folks who were bringing in that question of, you know, how are doctors being trained to deal with diverse communities, in particular Black communities, and in particular in Baltimore? You know, what is that relationship between Jeju Hospital and Jeju Medicine and Black Baltimore? Like, so there's so many different aspects here that when you kind of open up the box of Blackness and data, of thinking about, you know, Blackness beyond data, or what Blackness adds to and revises and edits when we're having conversations around data, you know, like now this ecosystem is here, right? And it's doing so many different things. It's working with, you know, St. Francis Neighborhood Center has come on as partners, and Lauren Rubin's come on as co-organizer. We're working with New Generation Scholars, with African Diaspora Alliance here in Baltimore. Sasha's working with Ink, Sweat, and Tears and the Runaways Project in the UK. Like, it just keeps growing because people see and sense that there needs to be some other way of thinking about data that's not satisfying all aspects of our communities, but especially all aspects of our, you know, messy and unable to be datafied selves, you know, and that's really what so much of this project is trying to lean into.
Thank you for that, Dr. Johnson. You know, we were hoping that if someone could explain to us in your imagination, like, what is the digital humanities, and specifically what is the Black digital humanities, if we can elaborate a bit on that.
So I'm happy to speak a little bit about that. So digital humanities is a term that scholars use, practitioners use, and increasingly we hope folks underground use to talk about the intersection and work that's happening that is technologically related, that is thinking about the tools that we use, our digital tools and social media, that is thinking about code and encoding and really all aspects of things that might be relegated to like technology or community science, and how those actually interface with the humanities, with literature, with the social sciences, with anthropology, with ethnography, and with the other kinds of disciplines that I've sort of been seen as not very digital, not very computational, not very technological, but actually, as DH shows, there's a lot of synergy in between each. So that's sort of like the academic version. The more lay person's version I use when I'm talking about it is what are the ways that technology is sort of, you know, part of our everyday lives. And so that's DH broadly. And when we're talking about Black DH, one of the ways that we scholars of Black DH talk about it is that, you know, Black DH is an opportunity to really revise and edit both of those categories, right? It's an opportunity to revise how people are thinking about the humanities, which has typically seen Black scholarship, letters, literature, and Black people is outside of the, you know, the literature scope, outside of the Enlightenment. It's an opportunity to revise how we think about the humanities and an opportunity to revise how we think about the digital. Because again, in the same way, Black people, Black community has been seen as not technological, not scientific, not digital. It's always conversations about, you know, where there isn't bandwidth for Wi-Fi, where people don't have STEM programs, or people are not skilled in things. Never mind if you go anywhere in the Global South, you will find folks who are, you know, like some young man or child at 12 years old can fix your phone better than anybody at a T-Mobile store. Like, you know, like the reality is that Black people, Global South people broadly, are incredibly aware of technology and aware of it in hardware, software, and every other kind of form. And that is something that we need to be thinking about in all kinds of ways, in positive ways, in negative ways, in critical ways. And Black DH offers us an opportunity to do that, and both to challenge containers that say we're not part of those conversations of the digital and of technology and of humanities, but also to say that, you know, we're already having a conversation about what it means to be Black and digital, or Black and data, or Black and computational. You know, let's keep having that conversation the way we want to have it, not the way that technocrats and academics and humanists want us to have it. We have our own ways of doing it.
I just want to add to that, because I'm super new to the digital humanities. I've been, you know, especially as someone actively doing digital humanities, I've been reading Jessica's work and Kim's work and Marissa Parham and others' work for a while, but this has been the first chance to engage. And what I've been really amazed by, and it's probably super obvious to everyone else on this call, but I think, you know, what I've been amazed by are the ways in which engaging in Black digital humanities practices and methods really is so radical in achieving things that you cannot achieve within traditional academic disciplines, and producing ways of speaking, language, ways of knowing and fundamentally knowledge production and the dissemination of knowledge production that is not achievable anywhere else, really, that I've seen in academia. And that's an incredibly, incredibly powerful resource. And I think, you know, it speaks to not only the amazing folks who are on this project, but also just the ways in which we could build ecosystems and build structure and make this a much larger space apart from, but also situated to some extent, perhaps adjacent to or within the academic space itself. But it's, you know, I've been amazed by how powerful a tool it is once you're really engaged in these methods.
That's a great answer from both of you. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Jessica, I was thinking about, you know, what you were saying about there being avenues into the humanities via data and via the digital humanities that you wouldn't necessarily first think of, you know, not the most obvious humanities disciplines. And one of the things that I'm really struck by, Kim's got it on the COVID Black website, the concept of being data griot, you know, this idea of storytelling through the digital humanities. So I was wondering if you could elaborate upon this storyteller role within the Black Beyond Data project and, you know, speak more to what kind of work that does and what kind of, you know, radical achievement, in Sasha's words, that facilitates.
This is a great point. And actually, though, I actually might turn it over to Lauren to speak of the work that Lauren and Kim are doing with the Data Stewards Program, because it strikes me that actually you guys are doing exactly this work in like getting the community to tell its own data story and to be, you know, very much, you know, key partners in how to do this work. So Lauren, maybe you could jump in.
Yeah, I'm absolutely. That was my first thought as well, was thinking about the community data stewards who we are currently in the process of hiring right now. So the community data stewards as part of the community data project are five individuals who are paid and compensated for their time and will also have scholarship opportunities that are written in at the end of their tenure with the project, working in five different areas/subcommunities, which are health, education, social justice, environmental justice, and faith and culture. And the idea there is to really put the data and the stories behind the data in the hands of the community and to give control of that data and of those stories in the hands of the community. So as part of building this community data hub, this, you know, as Jessica was talking about, this CMS that's going to house a lot of this data and be accessible to community members. A big part of that is melding qualitative and quantitative data. So because quantitative data, we all know, not only doesn't tell the entire story, but it can also be incredibly stigmatizing, used for not necessarily the best means, you know, when newspapers, media, nonprofits, organizations, corporations talk about communities of color, they'll often, you know, and Jessica touched on this a bit, say this is a dangerous community, this is a not educated community, and that does not capture the full picture at all. There is so much Black joy and life, and there are stories in our community that are just not being, that are being erased essentially with data. And we don't think that that means data is bad. We think that that means that there's another layer, there's more knowledge that needs to be contributed, and it needs to be in the hands of the community. So the community data stewards will be facilitating this, and they'll be shaping the way that the community data hub grows. They're going to be naming it. They're going to be dealing with the aesthetics of it, the accessibility, the user interface, and also being in community and talking to these different subcommunities and folks and galvanizing them around using this platform, the software, and to get them to post their own stories, to share their digital heritage items, photos, histories of the neighborhood, oral histories, all of those things, and really shaping the narrative themselves.
Thank you so much, Lauren. And I do appreciate you mentioning, you know, the perception of Baltimore, because I grew up in East Oakland and it was this pre-gentrification. Of course, it was the same thing, like, oh, wow, it's dangerous over there and stuff like that, you know, ignoring the joy and the beauty and the culture that we create. And I see the same thing here in Baltimore. It reminds me so much of home. But one thing that you did mention was with the St. Francis Neighborhood Center and the different things that you all address. You mentioned health. And so we were thinking if you could elaborate a bit more on how you all work specifically to address health inequities in and around Baltimore.
Absolutely. That would be my pleasure. We collaborate with COVID Black and got support of Hopkins through Dr. Jeremy Green to assist in making St. Francis Neighborhood Center a community vaccine clinic and resource site, and like with the health department. And Kim hosted a town hall to discuss, you know, as Sasha said, as what we would call vaccine hesitancy, what is really a super complex set of issues, and to not be patronizing about it. But I've noticed that when a lot of nonprofits have these sort of information sessions or town halls, there is always a white male physician talking to community members saying, you don't know what you're talking about. Like, we are here to tell you this is right, this is wrong, not validating anyone's concerns, not even acknowledging the history and the trauma that is associated there. And so we really wanted to not have a physician leading this and to sort of really meet people where they were, where they're at. In addition to that, we are currently developing a pre, peri, and postnatal support program for, you know, new mothers who are needing support with anything that they could possibly need, including extra ultrasounds, anything from yoga to diapers to anything that we can help them out with, and also helping to reduce some of the maternal mortality by incorporating midwives and doulas and sort of helping the medical aspect by taking out the medical aspect in some ways. And in addition to that, we distribute COVID tests, PPE. And one of the things that St. Francis did when it was founded in 1963 is we had a dental clinic right outside, which I think is so cool. And it's really something that we're looking to pivot back to in providing equitable healthcare in the community. So there's a lot of new initiatives forthcoming.
Lauren, wasn't the St. Francis Neighborhood Center also involved when there was the water crisis in Baltimore? Like, you guys are also like, respond immediately to crisis.
Yeah. True, that did happen. We were able to distribute many, many gallons of water when that horrible situation struck and there was no drinkable water in our neighborhood.
Thank you. Thank you all for that. Before Christy asks the next question, I just wanted to thank Lauren and Sasha for mentioning, you know, the vaccine hesitancy and the medical community not necessarily mean the community on their terms and speaking to rather than with the community. You know, this is something that I'm trying to address in my research as well. So to see it in the present sense, you know, it's good to see folks still fighting a good fight.
I think, Antoine, if I can add to that, I mean, this is also work that you and I are engaged in with the repair project at Johns Hopkins. And another aspect of this is some of the work that myself and also Dr. Heidi Nichols are attempting to do relating to confronting racism within the field of medicine itself and the use of data, thinking about race corrections in medical algorithms and in a host of other areas that have been, you know, deeply complicit in the use and employment of racist tactics in medicine, histories of medical violence, colonial medicine, and a host of things that are located very much in Johns Hopkins history. You know, I think that there's something important to recognize about this work being done in Baltimore. And I don't think that Baltimore is any way incidental to Black Beyond Data. In fact, I think it's, you know, fundamentally essential to it. You know, Lauren, as you mentioned, you know, we can look at the water crisis, look at the ways in which data on the community in Druid Hill and Reservoir Hill have been unfairly utilized. But you know, we can think about Samuel Kelton Roberts' work, the book Infectious Fear, and see the ways in which historically, you know, the areas around Druid Hill Park have been used and exploited for the production of data around infectious disease, tuberculosis, and a host of other illnesses. And as a result, justifying things like segregation and justifying redlining and justifying other forms of dispossession of which Johns Hopkins Hospital has been complicit, deeply complicit. So I think that, you know, there's something to be said for theorizing and conceptualizing and engaging in Black digital humanities, especially on the question of data and especially on the questions of health data from Baltimore, that's really critical.
One of the great things about the ecosystem side of things has been that we have been able to establish this here in Baltimore as, in a lot of ways, like, you know, so much of ground zero in racism and medical humanities is here with JHU Hospital and, you know, and Black Baltimore's relationship to Black Baltimore. And a lot of that was work that, again, I want to bring, you know, speak Kim Gowan's name on. What's been great about the ecosystem sort of upgrade, thank you to Mellon, has been that now we've been able to expand out of Baltimore as well. So that Baltimore work is continuing with that support. But now Dr. Gowan is at Brown University and establishing the Black Health Heritage Archive there. Pretty soon we'll have, she'll be working with a postdoctoral fellow, which the call is out now for postdoctoral fellows who are interested in doing any work in this realm of medical humanities and racism and Blackness and data. She is working with the community members there as well. I believe part of the data stewards launching and conversation is going to be happening there as the Black Health Heritage Archive, you know, models off of work that we've been doing already here in Baltimore. And we, there's very generous, but really it's Kim has been the genius behind all of that. And Kim working with Lauren, like these two, you know, amazing community organizer, scholar, activists. So like, that's been the really exciting part. And it shows that, you know, as great as the work has been in Baltimore and in Black Baltimore and thinking about Blackness and Beyond Data here, there's actually so much work to be done. I mean, there's the need is there and the kind of intellectual curiosity and creativity is also there. So I just want to make sure I shout out Kim is continuing that work and expanding the ecosystem. And we're looking forward to more and more kind of like planting seeds in other places where this work can flower and flourish.
Flowers for Kim Gowan, indeed.
Yeah. No, that's incredible. Thank you. It's really inspiring to hear about all the different, continuing with the plant theme, tendrils that this project has out in the community. Going back to the more kind of, I guess, academic side of things, I was wondering if both Sasha and Jessica, if you could speak a little bit more to how previous research or previous projects, you know, we talked about how this project came together, but for you specifically, how your previous research has kind of led you in this direction of the Black digital humanities and Black Beyond Data in general.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, I was trained as a sociologist. I've been generously described as a historian of medicine now at this point, which is great. So, but you know, my bachelor's is in Black studies. And I think that, you know, much of my career has been attempting to get back to Black studies through sociology, history, medicine, et cetera, and respond and engage and be a part of the various communities within Black studies. And I think, you know, research, which has primarily been on, you know, histories of international infectious disease epidemics and how racism and xenophobia and capitalist concerns have structured the fundamental ways in which, especially the Western Hemisphere, views the threat of infectious disease and has viewed the threat of infectious disease since the 19th century. You know, that what interests me about that project and what has always been my goal is looking at the ways in which data, regulatory regimes, bureaucracies structure positionalities, structure, subject formation in particular ways. What this project has really allowed me to do is not only think more deeply about that in the other spaces that I'm very concerned and focused in, which is, you know, namely resistance and Black resistance in various spaces, whether it's to enslavement or to racism or infectious disease control, but really thinking about how we can rethink agency, challenge sociological in particular, understandings about revolutionary action and a host of other things through different ways of thinking about data and different ways of producing data and speaking to and learning from and speaking with other voices that are not very much so. And I think this is a particular critique of the field of sociology. They're never included as actants within historical sociology and are rather seen as objects upon which things happen. So this has been a critical place to intervene that's not, you know, that would not be available otherwise within dominant disciplinary settings.
So in terms of Black DH, I sort of fell into DH as a field. I did a lot of work in the world of sort of radical media, folks who are organizers, who are poets, who are doing community work, who are just sort of living back in the beginnings of sort of that blogging era. Really not the beginnings, actually. It's more like blogging was kind of adolescent. But in the beginning, certainly of social media, Twitter. Twitter's founded in 2006, I believe. Tumblr's founded in 2008. So have been blogging talking since then, and found that my work in academia began to kind of take better shape. I began to find, you know, bridges or create bridges between that work, which is around Black feminist thought, which is around radical women of color blogging, transformative justice. Began to find bridges between talking about that work and my academic work, which is I'm trained as a historian. My interest is in histories of slavery, African diaspora, 17th, 18th century, all of that thing. And so I sort of like, you know, I'm an interloper in a lot of ways on the academic side of DH, and have seen actually the academic side of DH emerge into what might be described as sort of like, you know, full-blown discipline with centers, with jobs, with positions, with grants and funding, et cetera, et cetera. And that's been an interesting experience for myself, and I'm sure others who sort of was looking at it from afar was like, this seems like a nice hobby, but not necessarily an academic pursuit, mainly because academia is kind of a weird place for trying to think about anything radical thought. And turns out DH is also a weird place for thinking about radical and radical thought, because it is incredibly white. And there have been a lot of various dust ups over the last, you know, decade and more about, you know, what it means to do the digital, what DH means, the ways that certain projects and opportunities are corralled within the academy when scholars are also scholars outside of the academy, and when folks are doing amazing work on the ground that has nothing to do with what's happening in the ivory tower. And so all these conversations have been happening, and I've been lucky enough to be able to sort of think about what it means to, you know, for example, study the history of slavery in the context of an academic world that is increasingly interested in digital projects, especially around enslaved people, especially in slavery's archive, which is, you know, incredibly computational for reasons that should be obvious, but, you know, I'll state her because Africans are transmuted into commodities as they're crossing the Atlantic and reduced to, you know, ones and zeros. And so I've been lucky enough to be part of those conversations and to be able to add input where I can. But in thinking about, you know, my relationship to DH, like, I am a digital humanist, but do digital humanists want me? And more importantly, like, my goal always with something like DH and even something like with history is to really push it beyond the kind of confines of the university, right? Like, and to really push the case, as I do, I have an article where I talk about the four DHs, in which one is just digital practice, like people just being on their phone, you know, creating TikTok videos and playing around with emojis. That also is a way of thinking about the digital, and that we need to really take seriously, you know, some of the kind of enclosures that we put around DH when we're at the academic level. We could get into technocrats, but that's a whole different thing. That thing that's happening right now with like AI writing, that's an interesting conversation that we can have. But, you know, like, we need to think about the enclosures we'll put around opportunities and projects and even ways of thinking when we're talking about DH, and ways that those enclosures really kind of cut out a lot of, not just a lot of the global South, but a lot of ways of thinking just in general that don't fit those nice containers. One of the projects that I started when I got here is called Life Code Digital Humanities Against Enclosure. And that's one of the partner projects on Black Beyond Data and other, has a series of different labs like the Diaspora Solidarities Lab, Keywords for Black Louisiana. And its goal is to do that, to create a kind of landing space for scholars, students, community members, whoever, who are trying to think about digital humanities against enclosure. It joins other kinds of collectives that are doing similar work, like Dig Black at Penn State, like AdHume at University of Maryland, which is run by Marissa Parham. Dig Black is a whole bunch of folks, but probably Gabrielle Forman is the most well-known there. You know, like, it's not alone. Like, I think a lot of us have been trying to kind of find how can we create basically these maroon spaces, even within DH, which is a fairly progressive space. How can we create these maroon spaces for folks who are trying to like really kind of trouble and challenge some of the assumptions behind these now disciplines?
That was a great answer. Thank you so much. I just want to say, you know, speaking about the blogging and the digital practice and everything, I did love your how to build a real girl article. And we'll link to that in the show notes, along with all the other amazing scholars and projects that you just mentioned.
Yes. And trying to piggyback off of Dr. Johnson's response, I'm curious if Sasha or if Lauren, you know, if you wanted to touch on, you know, how we see digital humanities and projects like Black Beyond Data, you know, interacting with and changing practices of not just history, but, you know, the medical humanities as well, both like in the present and in the future.
Small question. Massive, in fact.
It has definitely changed our work at St. Francis Neighborhood Center. Unqualified, yes. So one of my personal professional goals as someone who was in an academic space and sort of moved into a more community-based space is to bridge that gap between academic scholarship and community-based praxis, and to really marry what is possible in terms of having communities benefit from the research that is available, from the scholars who are doing the research, from this wealth of information, these tools that are so often extremely siloed, but simultaneously to create sort of a symbiosis in which academics are also listening to communities that they are talking about, as opposed to just talking about them. Again, this is a theme, talking with them, because, you know, again, we're back to technocracy where experts are the ones, quote unquote, experts are the ones who are setting the rules of the game. And I think the really cool thing about digital humanities is that it sort of inherently breaks the rules in a way by the way that it is structured and created. It says, okay, here's humanities, but the way that we've been talking about it for centuries, actually we can flip that and do things entirely differently. So it encourages new connections that necessarily weren't there before, bridges and ecosystems like Black Beyond Data, and new actors to come in and work with things that weren't considered data, but are now that we're now thinking about data. And Dr. Gallen always talks about, you know, a Facebook post is data. And I think that bringing that up to discussing that with community members at St. Francis Neighborhood Center, that has been really interesting to reconceptualize data in that way and looking at it from a more digital humanities lens with that, like, Black studies epistemology, that epistemological framework, I think, as trying to really center it in digital humanities and in African American studies and practice. It's definitely changed the way I view my work, and how, especially learning from scholars like Dr. Johnson and Dr. White and Dr. Gallen, having this community, all of the different parts of it, Life Code, COVID Black, Black Press Research Collective, talking to other educators from the UK that Sasha has brought on, this has all informed how I work with community. And I think that if any community-based organization has a chance to gain insight and knowledge and conversation from a project like this, I would encourage it. And that's a huge understatement.
I mean, I think for me, and once again, I'm going to kind of fall back on the Black digital humanities for the social sciences a little bit, because I think Lauren said absolutely everything and more that I would want to say on most of that. But I think, you know, I think that, you know, as a sociologist and trained in a particular sociological tradition, I recognize there's a great deal of disciplinary complicity in the sort of data practices that we're actively attempting to challenge. You know, this is the sociology is the discipline that coins the term, you know, social death around Black lives. And it's the, you know, it's a discipline that continues to largely produce a lot of work using large scale data sets correlating, you know, racial census categories to crime or to whatever sort of flawed societal indicators that exist to reproduce visions of Black life and non-white life as bereft of culture, as bereft of joy and a host of other areas. So I think, you know, and all of that work can be done so easily without ever engaging or talking to someone from the neighborhoods from which that data, you know, these data are being drawn. Right. And I think that the, you know, what this work is trying to do, and I think, you know, especially what Lauren and Kim's work is exemplifying, is a flat out refusal of that practice as academics, And I have been incredibly grateful to both learn from that, but also to, you know, be a small part of kind of engaging in that. So I think that there's a, you know, I hope that, you know, as this develops and as you know, we continue to do the work that we do and have community collaborators lead the way in so much of this, you know, there's a strong refutation of those sorts of practices that, you know, are responsible for producing exactly the sorts of data usages that we know are so dangerous.
Right. And of course that applies to, you know, the medical field as well, histories of medicine, medical humanities, all of that. When we're just interviewing one person, we usually ask, okay, who are the scholars that you have historically thought with and thought alongside, and who are you really inspired by? And we wanted to ask you, the three of you, or the Black Beyond Data Project as a whole, you know, who are some of the scholars, and we've mentioned already quite a few in this conversation, but who are some of the scholars and or other collaborative projects that have influenced the conception of the Black Beyond Data Project? And, you know, you mentioned some others at University of Maryland and some other universities, but who else are you thinking alongside for this work beyond those who are just, you know, directly involved in the project?
So I feel like I'm constantly in doing anything digital related. I'm always thinking with the crew of folks that I feel like groomed me into thinking about radical women of color thought and thinking about the digital broadly, all of its many possibilities for transformative justice and social justice. So folks who are still doing amazing and are going to keep doing amazing work, like Moya Bailey, who recently published Transforming Message Noir, but also has a book with Sarah Jackson and Brooke Foucault-Wells, hashtag activism, really getting into hashtags and social media data and its impact, and impact in particular that Black folks, Black femmes, trans and queer folks have had on really reshaping the culture, the discourse broadly. Folks like Alexis Pauline Gums, who has done some of the really just truly foundational Black digital archiving work of Black queer elders, who her and Shangadari Wallace have been doing amazing work on podcasts and creating Black queer livable material everywhere online, everywhere you can find them. And Poet is a writer. It's a writing practice that blows my mind. I don't know how her amazing self keeps producing. And, you know, every time I look up, she's got a new poem out. And I'm just like, yes, like this is the nourishment that I needed. So those are folks, Adrienne Marie Brown, so many folks who are doing that kind of critical, you know, rethinking the world work. On this sort of DH academic side, Gabrielle Foreman, I literally would not be here without her, Marissa Parham, and Abdullah Kalamat, who is really one of the, you know, Black digital pioneers that we don't shout out enough. Alondra Nelson, same thing. So there's folks that, like, I keep in the back of my head. Where I enter into this with my research, particularly with slavery and data, and thinking about slavery's archive, there are actually a host of Black historians who have been talking about this, but they're not necessarily talking about it in the context of digital humanities or in digital humanities spaces. So Jennifer Morgan's new book, Reckoning with Slavery, in my regard, should be a Digital Humanities 101 text, because it's basically about how the field of demography and population and computation got created because of the slave trade. And nobody has really done that work and that explicit challenge to the Enlightenment ways of thinking that we need to be doing when we're talking about data. Vince Brown has been doing this work with History Design Studio. Bert Russer is doing this work in various challenges. Autumn Womack has an amazing new book on Du Bois and data and that 19th century turn of thinking about data and social science. So, you know, these are just a few of the folks. There's folks that I'm naming just because I'm, you know, moving quickly because I know that, you know, Lauren and Sasha, I want to hear theirs. But, you know, there's actually a lot of us. And I think sometimes because we're often working in silos, because, you know, some of our collectives have only come together really in like the last 5, maybe 10 years, you know, it can feel like, oh, there's just one, or there's just like a couple, or just one group. But we've been working on this a lot. And the great opportunity we have here with Black Beyond Data and across all of our network and our kinships is to like say, like, no, we're here. We're going to keep talking at you about how you're thinking about Blackness, about how you're thinking about data. We're not going to shut up. And you have to change what you're doing. Just like Sasha was just saying, like, you have to change your rubrics, you have to change your standards, and you have to talk to actual Black people or whatever group you're working with or you think you're an expert on if you want to actually do work that has any kind of impact, or instead of regurgitating the same things.
This project's been so exciting to me academically, precisely because, like, I think it's allowed me to engage broadly with thinking with artists, with historians, with philosophers, and a host of others in really particular ways. I think, you know, for some of the work that I'm doing on especially slavery and the resistance to slavery, I think Rebecca Hall's work, especially in kind of using the medium of graphic novels and illustration to think critically about answering questions that historical methods oftentimes can't answer, is you know, has been so influential to me. You know, I'm always inspired by Stuart Hall, perhaps not necessarily in the realm of the digital humanities, but in terms of his ethics of practicing as an academic, as an intellectual, and lifting up, you know, the work of his students and others and facilitating communities. You know, I think on the work on slavery in particular, it's like thinking about slavery, you know, fundamentally differently. And I think, you know, Jessica mentioned Jennifer Morgan. I'd want to also add, you know, Marissa Fuentes, Christina Sharp, especially, and of course, Sadia Hartman. And then, you know, I think Edward Glissant has been really informative for me when thinking about data because of his concepts of opacity and the ways in which, you know, rights to opacity and ways of not being read. And you're sitting with the emotions and the power of data and also the power of that harm. William Kentridge's work, the artist William Kentridge, has been really influential to my thinking more recently, especially with the use of kind of print materials, archival kind of colonial documents and music have been critical for me as I think through these things. So this, you know, this project's really given me so many opportunities to expand beyond the spaces that I would normally have to be sequestered within. And also shout out to Kim and Jessica's work. There's also been like absolutely central to all my thinking on this.
Yeah, I was also going to say that the most influential scholars for me, I wish I could say, are the ones in this room, but Kim's not here. And but Sasha, Jessica, and Kim have been really powerful as I mentioned, and I'm so incredibly blessed to have the chance to have read their work related to Black Beyond Data, well, and not necessarily directly applicable. But this also sort of gives me an opportunity to plug some of the wonderful scholars that we've had come speak to the Black Beyond Data reading group who have been influential in this work and in my thinking. Just this past semester, we had Catherine Knight Steele, Brandeis Marshall, Autumn Womack, and Dorothy Berry. I also do want to plug as well just the work of another community organization that we work with, No Boundaries Coalition. I'm a really big fan of their work that they're doing around some of these issues as well.
Thank you all three, for your responses. Before we get to our last question, Lauren, I just wanted to ask about the reading group. Is it possible for people to attend virtually?
Yes, it is entirely virtual. It is the last Friday of every month at 12 o'clock noon Eastern. And I can follow up and send you a link to share out. It's based digitally at St. Francis Neighborhood Center, and it's held over Zoom. And anyone who wants to engage with this work is absolutely invited.
Sweet. Thank you so much.
We'll definitely plug that in the show notes for sure.
Yes. And speaking of plugs, if there's anyone that you feel like you may have left out, do you have any plugs for other projects, research, or events similar to, you know, the reading group or what have you, that's also, you know, directly or indirectly, you know, related to Black Beyond Data?
Just to follow up on the reading group, we are also, as part of this year of Black Beyond Data, setting up a working group. So we have sort of our more scholarly arm, which is the reading group, and then the working group will be sort of a place for practitioners to discuss ethics, methodologies, all of the real world things that go into engaging with community-based data analytics from that Black epistemological lens. And I'm really excited. So that's something that's forthcoming, and stay tuned.
Yeah, I think part of this project that's so exciting and something that Lauren mentioned is like we've really been so lucky to be able to work with so many different amazing organizations in Baltimore, in the United States, and also in Britain. You know, I do want to shout out some folks that we've been working with especially in the UK, the publishing houses of Ink, Sweat, and Tears and Spread the Word, who've done really, really amazing kind of speculative histories working with poetry and the arts. You should definitely check out their volume, Runaways London, which I'm holding up, but obviously no one's going to be able to see this. But it's an amazing piece of poems and artworks responding directly to the city of London and slavery, and attempting to restore life and histories to those who are only barely referenced in the archives of slavery. I also want to shout out Tony Warner and Black History Walks. If anyone's going to be in the UK or in London in particular, they run amazing programs on Black British London and Black London broadly, walking tours and things that are incredible. And you know, I just want to thank even more so the St. Francis Neighborhood Center for being in the neighborhood that I now reside in, but also for all the incredible work that they do. And please check them out and get engaged with Black Beyond Data in any way you can.
I'm just, throughout this conversation, it's become increasingly clear how expansive the project is and how many partners you have and how much work you're doing, which is just, it's really nice to hear about. And, I'm glad that the people who are listening to this podcast will get a better understanding of everything it is that you're doing, which is great. That's the end of all the questions that we have for you guys today. We so appreciate you talking to us. Thank you so much for taking time out of your Monday, the first Monday of the semester. Thank you so much. And that's it from us.